Giriwaradhari Yashura Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet So today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20, Verse 8. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yairidam bubuje brahman Daichandrairani vartibihi Tesham kalo grashilokan Nayasho digatam bhuvi Yariyam bubuje brahman Daichandrairani vartibihi Tesham kalo grashilokan Nayasho digitam bhuvi Yairiyam bubuje brahman Jai trindar anivartibihi Tesham kalo grasilokan Nayasho digatam bhuvi Yairiyam bubuje brahman Daichandrairani vartibihi Tesham kalo grasilokan Nayasho digatam bhuvi Yairiyam bubuje brahman Taijindarani Vartibihi Tesham Kalo Grashilokan Nayasho digatam bhuvi. Yairam bhuvaje brahma. Aichindarani vartibihi. Tesham kalo grisir lokan. Nayasho digatam bhuvi. Yariyam bhuvaje brahma. Aichindarani vartibihi. Tesham kalo grisir lokan. Nayasho digatam bhuvi. Yai, by whom, yam, this world, bhubuje, was enjoyed, brahman, O best of the brahmanas, daichandrai, by great heroes and kings born in demoniac families. Anivartibihi, by those who are determined to fight, either to lay down their lives or to win victory. Tesham, of such persons, Kalaha, the time factor, Agrashit, took away, Lokan, all possessions, all objects of enjoyment. Na, not. Yashaha, the reputation. Arigatam, achieved. Bhuvi, in this world. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. O best of the brahmanas, certainly the great demoniac kings who were never reluctant to fight enjoyed this world, but in due course of time, everything they had was taken away, except their reputation, by which they continue to exist. In other words, one should try to achieve a good reputation instead of anything else. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this regard, Chanakya Pandita, this is from Chanakya Shloka 34, also says, Jusha kshana eko pi na labhya svarna kotibi. The duration of one's life is extremely short, but if in that short lifetime one can do something that enhances his good reputation, that may continue to exist for many millions of years. Bali Maharaj therefore decided not to follow his spiritual master's instructions, that he deny his promise to Vamanadev. Instead, he decided to give the land according to the promise, and he everlastingly celebrated, and be everlastingly celebrated as one of the 12 Mahajanas. Balir Vaya Shakir Vayam. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Jayapataka Swamini Tinamine. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine. Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschatya Desha Tarine. Hare Krishna. So, in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bali Maharaj is responding to Shukracharya's arguments from the previous chapter. And a few verses ago, Madhava Gauranga Prabhu had read from the purport that Prabhupada had said that Balaya Maharaj is speaking equivocally, and that he's not saying exactly what he's thinking. He's speaking on the platform of the demons and Shukracharya's arguments to whom he's addressing. So in this particular verse, Balaya Maharaj is addressing the situation in terms of Varnashram. This is the externals that he's speaking about. In this case, he's referring to his position as a Kshatriya. Daicha in dry, by great heroes and kings born in demoniac families. And Anivartibi, by those who are determined to fight, either to lay down their lives or to win victory. So he's speaking of the qualities of a Kshatriya. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is describing the four Varnas, and the 43rd verse is describing the Kshatriya. It begins with heroism. This is the first quality of the Kshatriya. Another one is honor, or reputation, one of these. And so it's very important for a Kshatriya to be heroic and be honorable. Another quality is leadership. So his honor and reputation are important also because he is a leader. In the second chapter, chapter 2, verse 34, this is one argument that Krishna is giving to Arjuna to fight, that if you do not fight, then everyone will speak of your infamy. And for one who is honorable, dishonor is worse than death. And this is precisely the argument that Balaya Maharaj is giving to Shukracharya, that if I perform this duty, then my reputation, I will live through my reputation. And in the purport even, Srila Prabhupada is speaking about reputation in terms of it lasting for millions of years. So this is in the context still of Varnashram, that the reputation of that action as a leader will stand in this world for millions of years. So he's speaking on that platform. And then previously there was a platform of, so this is the platform of Varna, and there's also the discussion in the ashram context in terms of giving charity to the brahmachari Vamanadev. So charitable acts are genuinely attributed to grihastha, that's the duty of that ashram. So Shukracharya is presenting that argument that, well, he presented the argument that you must take care of the body and you must take care of your duties in life. But it wasn't in the context that Vamanadev is the Supreme Lord. And we're speaking on the context of Varnashram, not directly addressing that fact. So Shukracharya, like Krishna Archama had mentioned, he's saying that this brahmachari is begging. So a beggar who's not performing duties in that context, he's as good as dead. Because what's the point in carrying on his existence, you know, giving money to a beggar? He's as good as dead. What is he doing? So he's fit to be killed. So if you read between the lines, you know, kill him, right? Of course, Srila Prabhupada can take the milk from water. And that, well, the underlying principle there is that this body is important for devotional life, so we must maintain it. And it's interesting that Shukracharya even mentions the purpose of self-realization in that argument, for the purpose of self-realization. Yet, he's not considering, you know, what is real self-realization. So Srila Prabhupada takes the milk from that verse to say that, yes, we should maintain our body because we need to use this body in devotional service. And Nityananda Prabhu had elaborately and very nicely gave some examples from some acharyas like the disciple of Raghunath Das Goswami, I think his name was, if I'm correct, like Kuvesha, who went in the place of his spiritual master to face the government, who was likely going to kill him, or and he lost his vision. And then when Lord Jagannath came to his dream and asked, what would you like? He was considering the welfare of others until his spiritual master said, your eyes belong to me, so I need you to see so that you can serve me. And the other very nice pastime was with Sanatana Goswami, who before, when he had traveled to see Lord Chaitanya, in that long, arduous journey, his body became very decrepit and pus was coming from his body. And he thought, this body is useless. So here I would just throw my body underneath the cart of Lord Jagannath and get rid of this useless body. And Lord Chaitanya embraced him. And upon that embrace, he purified his body and he said, this body belongs to me. I am your spiritual master. Very sweet. So the context is very important. However, the principles of Varnashram are also important. In the introduction to Sri Isha Upanishad, Prabhupada says that people are calling us Hindu. He says this is a foreign word. More specifically, this is the word that Muslims used to refer to those living in the region of the Sindhu River, I think, because they could not properly pronounce that region, so they called them Hindu. So then later it becomes Hinduism and this and that. But he says, we are not Hindu. That's a foreign word. We are Varnashram. So Prabhupada is emphasizing the value of Varnashram in the proper context. And one of Prabhupada's last wishes was that he said, I don't know the exact words, but I've heard this enough times. He said that my mission is only 50% complete. I did not establish Varnashram. So the details are important, but we also must understand them in the proper context. Now, as young, new devotees, it may be difficult for us to properly see. For instance, here, one may even have to come to the point where there's a principle where one neglects, I don't know the proper word, but he looks beyond a lesser rule in order to follow a higher rule, right? So here in this particular context, Bali Maharaj is following the higher rule of surrendering everything to the Lord, right? Whereas his spiritual master at this moment is saying he's focusing on the lesser rules because his vision is clouded. So as young devotees, when we see some details, especially as we learn more and more in this movement, we have a tendency, the neophyte tendency, is to see fault in our seniors. Because we can see the details, but we don't necessarily yet have the proper vision to see what the higher principles are and what the character is of the people we're following. And this can be very detrimental to one's spiritual life. The subtle implications of things, like, what should I really do here? And there's different ways of managing this, simple solutions. One is, there's two, I'll mention one and then the other one I'll focus on more. One was mentioned by Namaruchi Prabhu. He was saying that take shelter of your spiritual master and mentors that whom you're taking shelter of, and be specific about who you're taking instructions from. Because if you start taking instructions from too many people, it ends up being that I'm only taking instructions from people whom I think will agree with me. So especially in the neophyte stage, when we still have that tendency to see fault in those who we're taking shelter from, it gives us an excuse to say, well, I know better, right? What to speak of even our guru. My guru is wrong. Right? Very powerful, of course. This can happen even, right? So we should be careful. So one is to take instruction from not too many people. Like, what do they call someone who has 24 gurus? An avaduta. So it's a joke, but it is to say that if you accept everyone as your spiritual master, it's the same as saying there is no spiritual master, right? Like, for instance, one analogy is everything is God. You're basically saying there is no God if you say everything is God, right? Without a proper understanding. The other thing, which I think is, at least I'm going to present it with more importance, is the content of character is very important. So, for instance, when we get instruction from our mentors, the main thing they're focusing on is developing our character as a Vaishnava, as a devotee. So oftentimes sometimes we may be focusing on externals because it can be a symptom that we're not addressing some internal element. So when we receive instructions, we should take it that this is helping me develop my character. And this is what our mentors are really doing. This is why Subal Prabhu is often mentioning the Trinadapi principle, Trinadapi Sunicha no Tororapi Sahishnuna, humble and humility and tolerance. And as a mentor, he's not just speaking. In his devotional life, he's truly taken this principle to heart. So we can follow in his steps. In a seminar or events that happened some time back, Romapad Swami was sitting on the Vyasasan and Subal Prabhu was doing some service, and he announced right there on the spot, "See how humbly he is serving." And Madhava Gauranga Prabhu practically went into ecstasy. He made specific note of that. You know how sometimes when he's happy, his eyes get a bit misty, you know, Madhava Gauranga. So he looked at me with these misty eyes and he says, "Do you hear what Maharaj just said?" He said, "Look, just see how humbly Subal Prabhu is serving." And this is quite a huge testament to the character of Madhava Gauranga Prabhu. Because it means that he's truly taking to this principle to heart, to get so much ecstasy from that devotee being appreciated for that quality. You see? It's showing how much shelter he's taking and how much he himself is following in those footsteps. It's very powerful. So focusing on this is extremely helpful in our devotional life. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 8 through 12, there are qualities, these elements of knowledge are the qualities of our character, and it begins with humility. Prabhupada says that without humility, there cannot be understanding. In the 24 Guru seminar by Nityananda Pran, he said that this is something that separates the devotee, the Vaishnava, from the armchair philosopher. The armchair philosopher can sit and speak about compassion or honesty or humility, but the devotee is taking these to heart in principle and practicing them. And this is the difference. So I was reflecting on this, and I can see that I'm a long ways from the starting line in this process. However, what's helped me a lot is serving here as a brahmachari and beginning to develop these qualities. And we're acquiring that through our association in our service. For instance, just yesterday I was serving with Jitendriya Prabhu. We were reinstalling a toilet. And through that service, it really stirred up a lot of humility in me. I showed up for this service, and Jitendriya Prabhu was there, fully geared out. You know, he had his working pants on with some spots of paint and a shirt that you could sell, a shirt that's gone through quite a lot. And I'm standing there in my, you know, very pristine, soft dhoti, you know, holding things away. So it was very humbling. And the element was that I was there, I felt almost princely. I was a bit, you know, ashamed. But when Jitendriya Prabhu asked me, he said, "Prabhu, could you please hand me the wrench?" Wow. You know, so I hand him the wrench. He was there, you know. I say I was helping him, but more I was, you know, preparing this lecture in my mind while handing him tools. And he was there, you know, hunched over the latrine and cleaning things, and he gave me this rag, and he says, "Prabhu, could you please wash this?" And him asking me to take this rag to wash, it was like the kindest thing anyone had ever said to me in my life. Like the feeling, I felt so grateful to do that service. "Prabhu, could you please wash this?" Wow, I mean, quickly I washed it, you know. Otherwise, I would never touch such a thing. It's not my nature. I'm very, you know, queasy about these things. So, it was a very powerful experience for me. And I learned a lot about Varnashram in that moment. See, Jitendriya, to install a toilet, actually you need lots of tools. So a toilet and the installation of a toilet is like Varnashram. So the toilet, we are the toilet, okay? And our constitutional position is to be securely attached to the pipage of the city. And if we are toilets, I'm sorry, the toilet's constitutional position is to be securely attached to the pipage of the city so it can properly deliver the remnants of the devotees to the world. Now, so in our constitutional position, of course, is in the loving service of the Supreme Lord, right? However, to properly get from here to there, right, you need tools, and you need to use those tools properly, right? So for instance, one of the tools Jitendriya Prabhu needs is this thing, it's called, I saw it right on the side, I think it's called Mega Heat Gun. And it looks kind of like a hairdryer. Of course, when I read Mega Heat Gun, I'm not so intelligent, so less intelligent have to learn from experience. So I kind of held my hand there. Oh yeah, it's quite hot. It's confirmed, Mega Heat Gun. But it looks kind of like a blow dryer. So the tool, like a hair dryer, so the tool improperly used could, you know, catch your head on fire, right? But if it's properly used, it can be used to install the toilet, right? So Varnashram is like that. If it's properly used, it can help us in devotional life. If it's not properly used, it's not Varnashram Dharma. If it's not properly used, it's actually something called Upadharma. Upadharma is when you take certain religious practices, but you're not using it in the context of serving the Lord. You're just using it and calling it religion because it's being used. For instance, marriage, like the marriage ceremony. like people get married, and that in itself is a religious activity, right? However, if Krishna is not in the center, then what kind of marriage is that? Or a funeral, right? If someone's attending the funeral, we should understand, well, what's the purpose of the funeral? Yes, that is a religious activity, and it's done in Varnashram. Or giving in charity, right? This is an activity of Varnashram, but we need to understand the context, whether it's being done properly. See? Like one example I read, like one way that marriage is being misused, I just recently read this, that's why it's in my mind, is in India, when one is marrying their daughter to a young man, one way is that ceremony is being used to flaunt one's wealth and prestige, right? See, actually, during the marriage ceremony, it's good to be very generous, actually, and give a lot to the brahmanas. Even in Lord Chaitanya's marriage, his father was very generous. It's said that, see, they were, but their generosity was in the proper context. They were giving prasadam to everyone, you see, jai. And it's said that in that marriage ceremony, there was so much prasadam that more prasadam was spilled in serving the prasadam than has ever been used in any marriage ceremony ever. What to speak of the prasadam that was actually enjoyed? It said that when people went for seconds, I'm sorry, I don't know the Prabhu's name, Lord Chaitanya's father, he said, when they came for seconds, he says, give them five times more than the first time. So he was very generous, but he was generous in distributing the mercy of the Lord. Whereas an opulent marriage outside that context is just a show of one's wealth and prestige. See how pious I am. And it's gotten to the point that if one does not have a daughter to marry, in order to demonstrate their piety, they will actually marry a Parvati and they will marry Parvati and Shiva Murtis just for the purpose of showing how pious and wealthy they are. Even it's been done that people will marry dogs in this context. You see? So, another element is like, for instance, whenever you install a toilet, there's a wax ring that secures it to the piping, okay? I'm creating an analogy, right? So, if we are, if our constitutional person is chaste, is firmly connected to the service of the Lord, what is it that's holding us there? I'm asking the question, in devotional life, our constitutional position is to be firmly secure in the loving devotional service of the Lord. So what is it that secures us to that position? I'm asking freely. There's not necessarily maybe a correct answer. Intelligence. The mercy of Guru and Krishna. These are very nice answers. So, one thing that helps it is that sometimes there's not enough wax there, so you have to use multiple rings. So I like to think of it like this. We actually need three rings to secure us in that position. Now, I'm giving you a hint for the answer I'm looking for. There's three rings that are required. Marcel Prabhu Ki Jai. It's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So that's giving us these things, the intelligence, the mercy of the Guru. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that's keeping us fixed. And that will help us keep the details, the external elements, in the context of devotional service in our devotional life. So, I have a joke if you want to hear. So if you were to compare India, like Vedic culture in India, to American culture, or so-called American culture. In Vedic culture, they don't have toilets, right? Because they're much more sanitary. They have like a natural way of, I don't know the details, but here we're very experts at installing toilets and keeping them chased to the ground, right? To the floor there. And it requires a wax ring. And to make it more secure, it requires more wax rings, right? So to secure something in a chaste way, we use rings here in America. So similarly, in the Western system of marriage, we also use rings, right? Now, also, apparently we have a reputation here of marriage not working out so well. And since the toilet requires extra rings to keep it secure, I'm thinking the reason is we're not using enough rings. So just install, to keep the marriage chaste, you should use 2 or 3 rings. Anyway, that's my attempt at humor. Hare Krishna. Marcel enjoyed it, so success. So I hope this was helpful to you. At the very least, I'm sure you got some practical knowledge, which you may have not expected. If there's any reflections or comments or expansions or questions, I would be happy to let them be.
Suffering.
Wondering is suffering.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your wonderful class. And the reason I really appreciate it today and generally classes like this is because you glorify the devotees, not the only ones we hear in the scriptures, but contemporary devotees. And the reason I appreciate that is because it makes our association with devotees more personal, because a lot of times we walk by each other and say, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, and that's it. And we don't know anything about the devotees, really. And we have no inclination to talk about them. And I guess I'll try to relate it to this verse today, is that, and also Prabhupada mentions this in the Bhagavatam 7:5-12. He mentions that one should not be proud of one's own service. One should glorify another devotee. And the reason I appreciate it is because this is what Lord Chaitanya did. There's a chapter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita called the Chaitanya Tree. And in that chapter, it's just literally glorifying all the devotees. He mentions the names of like pretty much every single devotee, you know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He mentions it's this branch of tree. And one realization I got recently is that God is, in our scriptures, the Lord is compared to the root of a tree. Now, naturally, in the material world, we want to be God, the center, the root. But the interesting thing is about the root of a tree is that it can't be seen. It doesn't look for recognition. It gives recognition and holds up the tree. It's not looking, and that's what Lord Chaitanya does. He says, offer all honor, respect to others without expecting respect to return. And I guess if I was to ask a question, it's kind of related to one point I really appreciated from Gokulananda. He said, if you ask anyone, do you have any questions on Bhagavatam? The answer generally is no. But if we ask someone, do you have any questions on the latest gossip or the latest criticism of another devotee? The answer is absolutely yes. So we're so enthusiastic. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. He says, I resist all pious deeds, but I'm very active and enthusiastic to perform wicked acts. So in our material life, we're very enthusiastic to criticize someone if we disagree with them, if they disrespect us. So how can we come to this stage of being enthusiastic to actually glorify devotees, especially contemporary devotees, which makes more relationships more personal and not just criticizing. We're just enthusiastic to criticize, but not glorify. So can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah. The question is, how can we appreciate the devotees and in that way be able to glorify them, whereas the opposite side is criticizing and not appreciating. So I had said that one important element to appreciate what we're getting from the devotees, the main thing is the quality of one's character. That's what we're really learning. So one thing is that I haven't necessarily put this so much into practice, but I had considered it, that if there's qualities that we're desiring in devotional life, we can actively seek and look for those qualities in those devotees around us. So internally, we begin glorifying them, and then the opportunity comes to share. Then we can glorify them. It was said in the 24 Guru seminar by Nichananda Pran that one way to overcome envy, see, envy is why we're criticizing a lot of the times. One way to overcome envy is by glorifying that very devotee to whom we are envious of. So in terms of asking questions, maybe someone else is like, they hear questions and they're envious, maybe they want to ask questions, or they don't necessarily appreciate the point that's being made or something, right? Like in a specific way. So by glorifying those devotees who are doing those activities which we desire, it can help a lot. And if we're not yet prepared to glorify that particular devotee to whom we have a particular enviousness toward or an anartha toward, see, that's the difficult part. But we can start with those devotees who we do appreciate, right? And then we can look for it in those devotees who we are more neutral toward, in progress. And then we can do it also in those devotees who have those qualities, but we are envious of and not really seeing. I can give some examples of this just recently, right? Learning some things that we didn't necessarily expect simply by appreciating what we're hearing. For instance, yesterday when we were going to move the toilet, Jitendra Prabhu looked at me and he said that anything can happen, Prabhu. The road to hell is paved in good intentions. You see? So one can see that the details can all be in place, right? But still anything can happen. And I can see that actually this is a symptom of Jitendra Prabhu's dependence on the Lord. That he can do everything, all the details are there, all the varnashram is in place, but at the end of the day, anything can happen. We're still dependent on Krishna. So similarly, like during the festival, Krishna Arjuna arranged this very nice decorative thing with the flowers hanging from the ceiling. It's very beautiful, right? Yeah. So when we were hanging those flowers, or actually later when we were removing them, I was, both I think, when we were removing them, I was moving the scaffolding, and there's like a ladder, at that time he was just using a ladder. And I said, I would ask him, like, if it's in a good place, I would say, like, Jitendra Prabhu, is it okay? And he wouldn't give like a definitive yes. He would say, like, I think that'll work. Or close enough, or I think that might work. And when he said those words, he said, I think that might work, Prabhu. I asked again, like, is that okay? And he said, I said, I think that might work, Prabhu. Which means that the closest you can get to certainty is realizing you're still dependent on the Lord, whether that will work or not, right? So, like another instance, like just like, you know, 45 minutes ago, like we were finishing the morning prayers to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, right? And at the end, like Giddi Dadi Prabhu was like enthusiastic, like glorifying the Lord, and we're like, Jai, Jai. You know, the details are there, right? We're saying Jai, right? But we're missing the quality. The quality is enthusiasm. What does Jai mean? It means victory, right? When one defeats Maya or a huge battle, they don't say, Jai. You know, like we're fighting the biggest battle here. The biggest battle is getting out of the material world, and we're getting Prabhupada's mercy to do that. So Srila Prabhupada ki Jai. Jai, yeah, Srila Prabhupada ki Jai, right? And I'm going to continue just one point, because it is the appearance day of Sri Advaita Maharaj? Acharya. Sri Advaita Acharya, right, Sri Advaita Acharya. And I've heard that one element that should be revered in him is attitude, one's attitude toward devotional life. And in Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada says, success in spiritual life is determined by one's attitude. And one way to help having the proper attitude in the context of Jai Advaita Acharya, Sri Advaita Acharya, is that about 500 years ago, Sri Advaita Acharya looked at all of us in whatever species of life we were at that time, or whatever degraded condition we were at that time. And he looked at us with deep compassion. And he says, these people need help. These living entities need help. And he was praying to the Supreme Lord, O Lord, how can they be helped? O Lord, please come here and help them. He was begging to the Supreme Lord, please come here and help them. And the Supreme Lord reciprocated, and Lord Chaitanya and all his associates took birth at this time. And the thing that Lord Chaitanya appreciates the most, Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, they appreciate the most, is really humility. So whenever we have that moment where the heart is being grinded and we're feeling proud and we're like, this is the spot that I need improvement. We have the option. The proper choice is to be humble. This is not the time to be cool. We've been acting cool for too long, you know. It's the time to be humble. And we can be grateful to Sri Advaita Acharya and remember that this is a hugely rare gift. And it's the mercy of the devotees that we can really take advantage of it. Like, just another, I'm on a tangent, I guess. I was in the Pujari room the other day, and Leela Manjari Mataji was looking at the Pujari schedule. And she's doing, as you know, she does a lot of Pujari services. And she was looking, and I could see that she was very absorbed in that. And I said, what's that? She said, it's the Pujari schedule. And I could understand that, you know, she's arranging her whole life for that. And I kind of mischievously said, like, good luck, you know. And she says, Prabhu, we're holding on to Kishore Kishore's lotus feet as tightly as possible. Is the tornado's coming, the hurricane is here. And we just have to hold on to the lotus feet of the Lord and his devotees. So...
thank you. That solidifies my point. I appreciate that you got lessons from so many devotees, though. Thank you for mentioning that. Hare Krishna.
I heard that phrase, it's the fool who plays it cool. It's the fool who plays it cool. So you kind of define that. I never thought of it in that way. Thank you, Prabhu.
You're welcome, Prabhu.
You're a cool guy.
Uh-oh.
And most of the analogies, your teacher understood more than we did, because someone might not understand what the tour is. That's why I don't work with them. He's like, are you an idiot? I don't understand the terminology.
So, Subhal Prabhu.
Thank you, Jai Nitai Prabhu. I thought, just to add, because I also preparing for Advaita Acharya's class I'm supposed to give it on Sunday in Naperville. There is a beautiful prayer, short, from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya of Sri Advaita Acharya. It's called the Advaita Ashtakam. And it reads like this. Let me surrender to Sri Advaita Acharya, who with tulsi leaf flowers, water from the Ganges shore, and loud calls of love worship Lord Gaura and beg him to appear. Let me surrender to Srila Advaita Acharya. Attracted by his loud calls, the golden Lord of Goloka Vrindavan, who is an ocean of ecstatic love, appear in Sri Navadvip. Let me surrender to Sri Advaita Acharya, who by making the moon of Lord Chaitanya rise, floated the world with a love even Brahma and the great demigods cannot attain. Let me surrender to Srila Advaita Acharya, whose mercy is beyond understanding, and by whose request alone all-powerful Lord Chaitanya disappear from this world. Let me surrender to Srila Advaita Acharya, who is not different from the form of Lord Mahavishnu, and whose part and parcels are the Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva engaged in the creation, maintenance and destructions of the world. Let me surrender to Srila Advaita Acharya, who is worshipped by all, who is attained only by devotional service, and who is heard and who is heard in a certain Vedic literature, because he is Lord Shiva's shelter, has the name and glory like Lord Shiva's. Did I read that right? Did that make sense? Okay. Let me surrender to Srila Advaita Acharya, who is floated with love for Lord Chaitanya and whose beloved Sita Devi and son Achyutananda are also filled with love. And the last one, actually two more. Let me surrender to Srila Advaita Acharya, whose heart is Lord Gaura's eternal home, who is named Advaita because he is not different from Lord Nityananda, and who is named Acharya because he teaches devotional service. A person whose intelligence is pure and who every morning happily read these eight verses glorifying Lord Advaita, the husband of Sita, obtains devotion for his lotus feet and becomes dear to him. Srila Advaita Acharya Prabhu Ki Jai.
So I think that's a wonderful prayer to conclude today's Bhagavatam class and carry us through our services. So thank you, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Advaita Acharya Ki Jai. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shimate Mantra Kalpatu Vyascha Vaishnava Namo Namaha.